150.
Once I was lost, wandering in darkness, no life inside, no hope inside. He called my name and healed my blindness, set me ablaze. Now I'm alive with his law, breaking into my heart of stone, law breaking to awake my bones, law reaching out to save my soul. Jesus, my Savior, I am ablaze and full of thanksgiving. His love breaking through my heart of stone, love breaking to break my bones, love reaching out to save my soul, love never gonna let me go, love knowing me as I am, love making me new again, love lifting me when I
you never let go of me. Yes, I can.
And good morning once again to the Brooksville Church of Christ online services. This morning we are beginning our Bible study and at 11 o'clock have a lesson. So we're glad that you're with us this morning on a beautiful Lord's Day. It's 75 degrees here at my home, and I hope that everybody is doing well and continuing to to be positive during this time of challenge that we're living in, and I hope everybody's being safe, washing your hands, doing those things that we need to be doing. But we're glad that you're with us this morning, and many have joined us in this Bible study, and I hope that these things that we do help to encourage us and help us in this very different kind of a time. And this is, I think, like the fourth week that we are entering into. We may have a few more weeks of this. And we pray that this will be over soon. And I think we need to remember that this will end sometime. We do not know when, and how the effects of this and the impact will change all of us, as it already has. But we are going to get through this, and we're going to come back together again stronger and better because of it. But in the interim, though, we're going to encourage one another, and we're thankful for the technology that allows us to join together and to share together in this time of study. So this morning we're going to continue in our Bible study of the chronological life of Jesus, and we're using material by Gene Taylor. It's available on our website. The link is, and if you do not have the material, you can click on it. It's a PDF form, and you can print out either all of the material, or you can just print out the lessons that we're doing. We're on lesson 14 this morning. That's on page 39. We're really going to be covering just two stories, two events in the life of Jesus. We're going to begin in the ninth chapter of John and talk about the event of when Jesus heals a man who was born blind. And this actually goes into the 10th chapter, and we're going to be talking about that this morning. And then we're going to go to Luke chapter 10. When Jesus sends out his disciples, 70 of them, to prepare the way for him and to preach and teach the gospel. And so that's basically going to be our lessons for this morning. Now, I also, for my members, and I put it on the Facebook page, I put up a little overview of the story of the blind man. And I did that because I believe that one of the things that we need to remember about in our Bible studies that when we read these scriptures, we need to see the flow of the story and how that the people are involved in it, kind of looking at it from the eye of a camera and seeing here Jesus is talking to these people reply, something else happens, and we go off on there. And so what I tried to do was to try to show the stories that unfolded. And again, one of the unhappy divisions of scripture is that for whatever reason that, you know, the chapter 9 ends, and all of a sudden there's a beginning of a chapter 10, when in fact I believe that it is a continuing events that are unfolding. And so as often we may be prone to do is that we will, we're reading around John chapter 9, we get to the end of it, we'll stop, and we think, okay, we're done, when in fact there's more that comes after that. And so what I did in this material was sort of try to combine this all together. And so if you have the material, if not, you can look at that later. We have a miracle that happens, and we'll talk about this. And so there's a reaction to this miracle, first of all, by the neighbors of this individual that was healed of blindness. And again, you can imagine how incredible that was for a man, particularly who was born blind. We don't know how old he is, but he's been blind all of his life. Everybody knows that. There goes so-and-so, the blind man. Yep, he's been born blind. And so, you know, tragic thing that happens. But all of a sudden now he can see. And so we have this discussion of the neighbors. Well, then you got the Pharisees. The Pharisees always got to get their part in it. So they bring the man in, they question him. And, you know, they don't really accept the fact that he was healed of his blindness. They think maybe this was just all made up. So what do? They bring his parents in. I love this man's parents. You know, I mean, they got some reservations, but, you know, I mean, they're great parents. They said he's old enough to ask for himself, so we're going to talk about what the parents have to say about this man. And then the Pharisees, not getting the answers that they want, they bring the man back in. The second occasion when the Pharisees have the man come back in, I love this blind man. I mean, you wish you knew more about him, but I mean, he just, if I may use the phrase, he nails these guys' hides to the wall. I mean, it's like, here are the Pharisees and they're the educated elite kind of people. And here's this blind man who, being a blind man, made a very difficult life, probably uneducated. And yet he's the one who's educating them. It's a beautiful story about how he just says to them, let me tell you something, boys. And so it's a great story. And the result of it is they just get mad and they cast him out. But then something remarkable happens. Now, when Jesus does this miracle, the man's blind, and he tells him what to do to be healed of his blindness. Again, we'll talk about that in a moment. The man doesn't know who Jesus is. He knows it's a man by the name of Jesus, but he don't know who he is. He's never seen him. He doesn't know what he looks like. Well, Jesus, apparently knowing about what's going on with the Pharisees, when he's finally kicked out and, you know, treated so contemptuously by the Pharisees, Jesus comes and finds this man and, you know, discusses with him what's happened. What a marvelous story that must have been, as this blind man, who's now not a blind man, but a seeing man, sees Jesus and is able to, you know, communicate with the man who healed him. What a great story that is. Well, and so it seems that when Jesus is having this discussion with this man who now can see, there are some Pharisees hanging out there. And so they're listening to what Jesus said and they get offended. They say, you know, well, what are we, blind also? And this is why I think chapter 10 should be part of chapter 9, is because Jesus talks about their blindness. And he talks about the fact that they cannot see and they do not hear and that they do not know as a sheep would know of the shepherd. I mean, come on. Here Jesus is showing his power and they can't recognize that. And so he uses this illustration about the shepherd and the sheep. And so I think that's why it's all kind of in one little context that I've tried to sort of put that together in this paper. But anyway, so we don't know exactly the event of what has brought this about, but the disciples, the Jesus, are traveling about. And in John chapter 9, it says that as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. Now, I don't know whether this is interjected, of course, in part of the story with John, or, you know, did they ask him, I mean, how long have you been blind? But I mean, this is a monumental kind of a thing. It's not something that he got something stuck in his eye and he lost his sight or something. This is a man who was born naturally blind. And so the disciples asked the question, what question did the disciples of Jesus ask of him when they saw the man who was born blind? They asked a question it's been really predominant with men generally. I mean, it's not just in the Jewish context, but the idea is that here's a man who's born blind, and their concept of that is that, well, somebody sinned. They attached, correctly and incorrectly, the consequence of sin and having to do with if a person has suffered a great deal, if something bad has happened to them, obviously there's sin involved in this. We could go back and talk about the book of Job and the fact that his three friends, at least three of the four friends, pretty well convinced Job that the reason all those things were happening to him was because he was a terrible, terrible sinner. And Job, I think, had some challenges about that himself. But still, the idea was that they thought, well, this man was born blind, so obviously either he sinned or his parents sinned. Well, okay, think about that for a moment. If a child is born blind, what have they done? They haven't done anything. I mean, they're innocent. They're pure of heart. There's nothing that they could have done as a child that this man would have done as a child that would have brought about his blindness. You know, is there something maybe that the parents could have done? Well, we know that oftentimes that if a mother is not caring for herself, maybe there are some things that may happen to a child that may be as a result. But basically speaking, the child was born blind because the child was born blind. But the disciples said, you know, who sinned? And Jesus's answer is very clear. that he says to them, neither this man nor his parents sin, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, what Jesus is not saying is that, well, let me say what he did say. First of all, he did confirm. Okay, number one, the man didn't do anything. Okay, that's not why he's blind. And the parents didn't do anything. That's not why he's blind. So he took that off the table. But he said that the reason is, he says, neither this man, but that the work of God may be revealed. Now, he is not suggesting that God made this man blind so that one day Jesus is going to walk by and the next thing you know that, this guy is going to be an opportunity for Jesus to, show his power. Jesus is not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that, okay, this was the purpose. What Jesus does is actually what he did later with Lazarus. If you leave your marker there, just turn the page over to John 11, verse 4. You remember that they came and told Jesus that Lazarus was sick, nigh unto death. And Jesus replies, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. It became an opportunity for Jesus to show the power of God. And that's all he's saying. There were a lot of blind people in the day of Jesus. There were a lot of lepers, there were a lot of sick people. Jesus is not suggesting that God brought all that pandemic upon everybody so that we could. I mean, that was the natural course of life. We know that even today that children are born with various maladies and things, and that's the natural course of life. What Jesus is saying is, okay, here's a man, he's born blind, and this is an opportunity that I can show the power of God and prove that he is the Son of God. And so he's the light of the world. And I don't think we need to miss that inference. Here's a man who's blind. Here's a man who's never seen the light of day. Here's a man who has never seen the colors of the world. And so Jesus is saying, I'm the light of the world, and I'm going to give light to this man who has lived in darkness. And then he does something I think that's very interesting, is that what he does is he has the man there, he's blind. Jesus spits on the ground, and it says that he spat on the ground, he made clay with the saliva, and he took that and he put it on the eyes of this blind man and said, go wash in the pool of Siloam. Now you may be asking the question, okay, why didn't he just, there it is. Okay, he's done that before. He heals people just immediately. Why did he tell this man to go and to wash in the pool of Siloam? A lot of this has to do with faith. A lot of this has to do with teaching the power of God. Jesus had the power to instantly heal this guy. Boom, it's there. But he was showing the power of God and the working of God and the faith of this man. And so he takes this stuff that he's put over his eyes, and I think obviously somebody has to lead him. Maybe he knows where it's at. You know, maybe he's familiar exactly where that pool of Siloam, would not doubt that. And so you can see the man here, he's still blind now. And so he says, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And so he goes, finds himself down there, and he comes into the pool of Siloam. Can you imagine what's going through this man's mind? Okay, what is this on my eyes? And, what's going on? But, okay, I want to do what this man says. I mean, this is not something that he's ever experienced in sight. This is something that from birth he's lived in darkness. And yet here he goes and he says, okay. And he makes his way down to the pool of Siloam and he throws that water all over his face. And a remarkable thing happens. An amazing thing happens. He sees. Boy, we could talk a little while about that moment when he's at the pool of Siloam, and the first thing he sees is this water. And he sees these people. And he sees everything. and he came back seeing, the Lord said. What an amazing thing. He didn't have any problem going back where he come from because he could now see. And so that was a great miracle. I mean, it was an incredible miracle that here we find that he is now able to see. Well, Jesus on this occasion did not, as he did on a few other occasions, say to the man, tell no one. Well, he comes back. Now, the second part of our story comes, the neighbors. And so the neighbors look at him and think, okay, there's something different about you. What's different about you? You combed your hair differently. No, what is it? Okay, wait a minute, you can see. Wow. But then they're confused. And they say, is this not the man who sat and begged? And some would say, well, yeah, he looks just like the guy who was begging there. He kind of looks like him. You kind of feel sorry for this guy because everybody's arguing about who is this man here? And he's like, I'm him. You know, I'm the guy here. I'm here. And so they said to him, well, okay, if it's you, how did your eyes get opened? And he says, well, a man called Jesus. Again, you don't know who this man is from Adam's house cat. I mean, here's a man called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes, tells me to go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I did. And because of that, I can now see. And the people are like incredulous. They're thinking, wow, that's just totally amazing. And he just tells a simple story. And they said, where is this guy? He said, I don't know. And he couldn't know because he was blind. And, you know, he leaves and Jesus leaves. But even if Jesus had not left, the man didn't know who Jesus was if he was standing in front of him because, you know, he didn't know who the man was. But he said, I don't know. I don't know who he is. Well, this is a big story. And somebody told somebody and somebody told somebody else and somebody told somebody else who told somebody else. And I'm not going to keep doing that because you're going to get really tired. Go walk away and get your glass of tea and come back. Don't you do that. But somebody told somebody and somebody told the Pharisees. They got to know. I mean, big stir going on, man who was born blind. And so they brought him who was formerly blind to the Pharisees. But there's a caveat. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. We know what day this was. It was Saturday. Jesus healed this man on the Sabbath day. This man went to the pool of Siloam on the Sabbath day and washed his eyes. It was on the Sabbath day. And so they bring him to the Pharisees. And so the Pharisees said to him, okay, you're telling us that you got your sight back. And so, you know, the reaction of the Pharisees, what was their reaction? Well, they said, how'd you get your sight? He says, well, it was kind of simple. He put clay in my eyes, I washed, and I see. And some of the Pharisees, their reaction was very negative. They said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Did you catch that? One of the things that we've said over and over and over again in our study of the chronology of the life of Jesus. The Pharisees, the Jewish leaders, never denied the miracle. They denied the teaching. And so you've got a man, and they're not yet convinced, never will be, but they're not yet convinced that this man really was blind at one point. But regardless, the first thing they go to is not, wow, what a miracle. That's incredible. That's just amazing. The first thing they go to is, you mean you did this on the Sabbath day? Really? The Sabbath day of all things? This man cannot be from God because nobody from God would do this kind of a miracle on the Sabbath day. And then others were kind of saying, but now, how can a man who's a sinner do this kind of signs? That's a good argument. So they got a problem. The problem is that a great miracle had been done. Not as if any miracle is not great, but truly this man was born blind and now he sees. And so the argument of one side was, well, they couldn't have done it because it can't be, it could not have happened because, number one, it was on the Sabbath day, number two, he's a sinner. And yet others were saying, but the miracle happened. How do you explain that? And so they asked him again. They said to the blind man, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? Well, that's kind of an obvious question with an obvious answer. What do you mean? What do you say about him because he opened your eyes? And so I love this guy. I love this blind man who's not blind anymore. He's a prophet. What do you want me to tell you? I was blind from birth, okay? I could not see anything, and now I can see. What do you want me to tell you? This man came, put clay on my eyes, told me to go wash in the pool of Siloam. I did, and, you know, hello, the man is a prophet. They still did not believe him. And so after refusing to believe, question number five, after refusing to believe the testimony of the healed man, whom did the Pharisees next question? Well, obviously, this guy's not telling the truth, so we're going to have to question the parents. So the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind. They didn't, but you're making this up. This cannot happen. It's not possible. And you were not healed. And so you go call the parents, you tell them to come here, and we're going to talk to them because we think you're making this thing up. We think you're just pulling out a leg. So they called the parents. And so there's the parents. They're in there, you know, they're getting questioned. They got the, you know, the light on them. They get, you know, they're getting, you know, interrogate these people. Is this your son? Is that your son? Is this your son? And was he not born blind? Huh? Is this your son? How now can he see? You explain to us, if that's your son and he was born blind, you tell me how he can see. I love the parents. It's like, well, we know this is our son. Okay? That's our son. We know he was born blind. No doubt about that. But how he got his sight and who opened his eyes, I haven't got a clue. I mean, with blind people, and particularly the infirmed and people like, you remember Lazarus who was laid at the gate of the rich man and others. One of the sad cultural realities in many Oriental cultures, and still true to some degree today, is that you become what is called a nobody. And nobody particularly cares about you. And the fact is that when you're blind, in this time period, you're non-productive. And so the best thing, and how heartrending that must have been for the parents, is that they were looking at their child and they realized that he's blind. And they recognized that he's probably going to spend the rest of his life begging. And again, that's what the neighbors had said earlier, is the fact that, is this not the man who had been, you know, had been begging? Because that's all the life you have. You're blind, you're sitting there, you're begging for people to give you something. Because he can't work in the fields. They have no programs. There's no social kind of a thing. And so it's a very terrible thing. And so you can imagine the parents' heartache is that they take this man maybe to the marketplace or somewhere, and they sit him down and then leave. So they were probably not there, of course, when this all happened. He was a grown man, took care of himself. And so, you know, they didn't know, and they weren't scared of that. I don't think that they truly knew. And they knew that was their son, and they knew he was born blind. And I have to imagine somewhere in that, they're kind of like, you can now see. I mean, give me time to have the joy here. But they, you know, they kind of respond that way. But then they say the best answer, he's old enough, ask him. Let him speak for himself. I mean, we don't know. Come on. If you want to ask somebody, go ask him. Now, John tells us that in part, they really didn't want to go too far. They acknowledged that he was their son. He acknowledged that he was blind from birth. They also acknowledged that he now could see. What they could not answer, probably truthfully, I have no idea how this happened, but here he is, and he can see. But John tells us that his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, because here's the deal. The Jews, you know, the reason that they responded in this manner in part was because they were giving information that they knew. But the other thing had to do with the fact that the Jews had made it clear that if you had any ideas, if you confessed that this Jesus guy, this Nazarene, this person, if you tell us that he's the Messiah, you're going to be put out of the synagogue. There are some bad things that can happen to you in life. And as a Jew, to be put out of the synagogue was just about the worst thing that could happen. And so the parents were willing to go so far to admit what they were able to admit. Yep, that's our son. Yes, he was born blind. Yes, he can now see. How it happened, the guy with blue. And maybe the blind man told his parents that I was there, this guy named Jesus came, but they stopped right there and said, okay, I'm not going to say what he did. They weren't going to defend him. And I don't know. How do you measure this? I don't know, you know, whether the parents should have stood up and said, hey, you know, he's our son. We believe him. But they were more afraid of the Jews and the Pharisees. And so they just basically said, you go ask him, okay? We don't know. You go ask him. So, the Pharisees, part two. So they called the man back in. They're frustrated. Everybody's talking about this great miracle that's happened. And they don't know what's kind of going on here. And they've asked the man, they asked the parents, and so they call him back in. They do not ask him a question. I want you to notice that they did not ask him a question. And so when they brought him back in verse 24, when they brought him back in, they just said, give God the glory. We know this man is a sinner. Well, I'd like to do a lesson about that. Give God the glory. We know. You know what? You're calling Jesus a sinner. And by that, they just meant a person of destitute character. We know. You really do? No, they didn't. I mean, they were so full of themselves. They were so filled with prejudice and hypocrisy and envy. They weren't going to ask a question. They were going to demand that this man denounce what he said. They're trying to tell this man, you were not blind. They're trying to tell this man and his parents, you were not born blind. They're trying to tell this man, you're not related to those people because those people, you know, they're denying everything. Give God the glory. We know this man is a sinner. And this is what I love this part of the story because this is so cool. When the seeing man now, he's not a blind man anymore. When he takes these people to task and he does a marvelous, marvelous teaching lesson. I mean, you know, the school is open and they're not the teachers, they're the students. This man is the teacher. And he says to these people, and he's not even afraid. I think that one of the things that we see about him becoming, receiving his sight back is it fills him with strength and courage. Boy, there's a great lesson there, you know. We need to have the courage of this man to boldly speak. We have had our eyes open. When we become children of God, I'm going to get to preaching here in a minute. When we get to be children of God and our eyes are open, we need to be like this man and say, listen, I'm going to tell you what has happened. I have been baptized for the remission of my sins. I have been sins washed away. I'm emboldened to tell people because he, unlike his parents, he's not afraid to just put it right up there before the Pharisees. They say, give God the glory. We know this man's a sinner. And he says, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. But I'm going to tell you one thing. I was blind and now I can see. What do you want me to do? I love this guy. You know, I want to give this guy a high five. Well, I can't because he's quarantined and I'm quarantined. And we can't do that. I mean, this guy is terrific. I mean, he just throws it back in their face. Okay, I don't know whether it's sin or not. But I'm going to tell you one thing. I was blind and I can see. Okay. And so they said, what did he do to you? How did he open the eye? And it's like, what do you mean? What did he do? I told you and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to be his disciples? I love this guy. He said, I've already told you. I've already said, this is what I have. What do you want me to do? You know, and what do you want to hear it again for? Do you want to be his disciples? Wow. I mean, this is so amazing. You know, he is really putting it right back on these guys. Boy, they lit up. They got really, really angry. And they began to revile him and listen to the poison in their lips, on their lips, in their speech, their arrogance, their pride. I want to also suggest to you that if you want to understand later again why they killed Jesus, this is why. Their arrogance was, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. Really? When did the disciple of Moses ever act like these people did? I mean, when did anybody who truly knew the law of Moses or even emulated the life of Moses, who would ever act like these guys are acting? And they go on to say, we know that God spoke to Moses, but for this fellow, we do not know where he's from. How many miracles do you want us to do? How many miracles do you think that this man can do to prove that he's the Son of God? I was blind from birth and now I can see. What do you want me to tell you? A great miracle has been done. And so the man answers him. The man answers him. And verse 30. Why, this is a marvelous thing. Oh, he's poking. I tell you, this is a learned man. This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from. Yet he opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. And since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who has been born blind. If this man is not from God, he could do nothing. What do you want me to tell you? A great miracle was done. And the fact that, yes, God is showing his working. Here is the man who is testifying of the power of Jesus. You remember what Jesus said in the beginning when the disciples asked about whether this man was born blind because of his parents or whatever? Jesus said, no, that I might work the works of God. Boom, this guy's listening. He's saying, listen, I don't know about you guys. He opened my eyes. And what he's basically saying is that this could not be done apart from the power of God. This is not done. It doesn't matter how much surgery, medicine, technology, science, whatever you can bring up, this cannot be done. It's not been done since the world began. And what he's just simply saying is that, you know, it's incredulous that you actually do not believe that what has just happened has happened. I've been born blind. I now can see. What do you want me to say? And so, had enough of him. You're completely within your sins and you're teaching us. The answer is yes. And they cast him out. They threw him out. Well, he was teaching them. But that's how hard their hearts were. That's how insidious their evil hearts had become to reject the powerful message. I mean, imagine if they would have accepted the fact that here's a man who was born blind, who had been healed by the power of God, and they glorified God, and they didn't because they were Moses' disciples. As the old expression goes, which is very fitting in this story, there are none so blind as those who cannot see. And that's exactly what happens. And then this next part is so important because Jesus finds this man. And he doesn't know who Jesus is. He doesn't know that this person he's talking to is the same person that just healed him. And so the stranger comes up to him and he finds him. Jesus finds him. And he asked him a simple question. Do you believe in the Son of God? And so question number 8, when Jesus heard what the Jews had done with the healed blind man, what question did he ask? Do you believe in the Son of God? It's clear that he does. And he said, well, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus says, you're talking to him. Oh, wow. What a great moment. He goes to the Pool of Siloam and washed, comes back. Where's the guy who healed me? He's gone. And he's being, you know, interrogated by the Pharisees, you know. And so then when that all gets over with, you know, he's being cast out, probably cast out of the synagogue, and maybe he was feeling a little despondent. I don't know. But, you know, who cares? He can see now. And this total stranger walks up to him and says, hey, do you believe in the Son of God? And he says, who is it, Lord, that I may believe? You're the guy. You're the one who healed me. You're the man. And those three powerful words, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped. What a powerful story that is. It's a story of conversion. It's a great sermon about conversion. That we who have been blind need to have our eyes opened by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so that when we receive our sight, that we glorify God and we seek him, we come to know him. And we say, Lord, I believe. Jesus then says, for judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. And so he answers the blind man. And so he says, you know, hearing Jesus' statement to the healed blind man, you know, Jesus says, boy, the glory of God. Well, then the Pharisees, they're kind of hanging around there, you know, trying, maybe they're finding, they're kind of following after him to see if he can connect up. But they hear that Jesus say that, and they get upset. And it says that in verse 39, judgment I have come into this world that those who do not see may see, and those who may see may be made blind. And then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said, are we blind also? Well, I mean, you know, I mean, what's that all about? Are we also blind? What does that mean? You asked the wrong question, fellas. And this is where this conversation, if you'll notice, if you have one of those red edition Bibles, Jesus begins in verse 41, and he doesn't stop talking until verse 5 of chapter 10. And I think that's why it's together. I'm going to try to fit this together for you. I'm going to try to show why I believe, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, but I believe it's all connected. Because Jesus says to him, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. They could not see the power of the miracle that had just happened. Hello, the man's born blind. They could not see it. And what they were rejecting was the great shepherd. They were rejecting the Son of God. They were rejecting the Messiah. And so in reference to the sheep and the voice of their shepherd, what Jesus is trying to show to them is that you've rejected me. God has sent me into the world to bring life. God has sent me into the world to shepherd his people. Psalm 23, the whole idea of David's emphasis and the whole emphasis of the shepherdship and the prophetic writings. But Jesus says that if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. You do not see. You think you're Moses' disciple. No, you're not. Because you're rejecting the very one who would save you. Because he who does not enter into the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. That's them. These Jewish leaders are the thieves and the robbers who are trying to circumvent the will of God. They're using the law of Moses to break over the head of their constituents. They're acting like they are Moses' disciples. They reject clearly defined miracles. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. That's Jesus. We know that that's Jesus. I have come to bring peace into this world. To him, the doorkeeper opens and the sheep hear his voice. And it says that he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them and the sheep follow him. For they know his voice, yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger. I want to interject in here. I think that, again, what we find is that the blind man, he's one of the sheep that are listening, because here's the man who's not the Jewish leader. He's listening to what Jesus is saying. He is saying, "Lord, I believe." The common people answered him. All the people that were supposed to be following Jesus, they don't follow him because they will not listen to the voice of Jesus Christ. They will listen to the voice of the Jews who are going to be Moses' disciples. And so Jesus, again, condemns them, and they don't even understand what he's saying. We find that in John 10 and verse 6, Jesus used this illustration, but they didn't understand things which he spoke to them. I mean, they're just clueless. Why? They're none so blind as those who cannot see. And he tries to tell them, "I'm the good shepherd, and you're rejecting me, and you're going to kill me." And then he goes on to say there, beginning in verse 7, he says to them again, remember the camera? He says to them again, okay, let me say this again. "I am the door of the sheep. All whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life." That's what he did with the blind man. "And that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep, but a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling. He doesn't care about the sheep. I'm the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I'm known by them. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore my Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down to myself. I have power to lay it down, I have power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father." I believe what he is doing again is he's showing the division of the Jewish leaders who are going to reject Jesus. He has come to save all mankind. Jesus come to seek and to save the lost. The Jews are going to kill him. Jesus knows that. But he's going to be the good shepherd. He's going to lay down his life. The hirelings are the Jewish leadership. They don't care nothing about these people. They're so full of themselves, and they're so full of all of their self-righteousness. They don't care about these sheep. And they're neglecting their sheep. And Jesus is saying, "I'm the good shepherd." And they didn't even understand what he said there. They thought that, you know, he's a demon. He's crazy. He's mad. Why do you listen to him? And then other people are saying, well this can't be a demon. This, because he opened the eyes of the blind man. I mean, come on. What do you do with the obvious? There are none so blind as those who cannot see. And this is a sad story because of the prejudice of the Jews. And those that are the sheep of Jesus are those who hear his voice and listen to him and they follow him. Those are the devoted ones, unlike the Jews in this story. Well, then quickly, the next story in our lesson this morning is about the sending out of the 70. And it's really kind of a quick story. It's in Luke chapter 10. And we'll just sort of hit the highlights there before we bring our lesson to a close. So Luke chapter 10 is where we are. And these are disciples of Jesus that he's going to send out. He's sending out 70 of those. Some of the manuscripts have 72. I think if you have the ESV or the NIV, it's the 72. That seems to be a conjecture on the part. But anyway, he sends these folks out. And we know that they are city disciples because he sends them out two by two. The reason that they were city disciples is if these were country disciples, he would have sent them out four by four. Okay, but he sends them out in teams of two. He did the same thing with the 12 apostles. You'll get this later. Don't worry about it. He sends the apostles out, but it's a great team kind of a thing, and it's an important thing. So he tells them, "This is what I want you to do. I want you to go out and I want you to trust me." I mean, imagine being sent out on this work and they can't take money bag, knapsack, sandals, or greet anybody along the way. You got work to do. And he tells them that you're going to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. If people receive you, great. If not, judgment's coming on them. Six cities are mentioned. He talks about Sodom as being an example. Because if people do not listen to the teaching of Jesus as these men go prepare the way of Jesus, let me tell you, it would have been better for the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. He mentions Chorazin. We don't know really what that city is. Bethsaida, north end of the Sea of Galilee. And he talks about Tyre and Sidon and, of course, Capernaum. And basically, he sends them out and says, go and preach. And that they do. They come back. They're all excited. And even the demons are subject to them. And Jesus says that I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I've given you authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. Nothing shall be the enemy and hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. So he is saying it's a great thing that what you've done, done a great work, but rejoice more that your names are written in heaven. One last thing before I close, just to catch up on this, that when he talks about seeing Satan fall from heaven, he's not talking about Lucifer. I'm just going to tell you this as a side. This is the last thing. And Isaiah 14 talks about Lucifer falling like a star. Lucifer is not Satan. The Bible has never referred to Satan being Lucifer. Lucifer in Isaiah 14 is talking about the king of Babylon. Jesus is not talking about that in this passage. He just simply says, I saw the power of Satan being diminished, and I've seen your glory. And he rejoiced in that and offers a prayer. And so we're out of time. Can't get into any of that. So there we go with the story of the blind man and the 70 being sent. Thank you this morning for being with us in this study. Stay tuned. We will be back at 11 o'clock. We'll have a lesson from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8. You can turn there and be preparing for that. And we will have a Lord's Supper talk after that. And we pray that you would be with us during that time. Thank you so much again for being with us. Have a wonderful day. See you in just a bit.